All right, you know what it is when they say that somebody is somebody's dog? Yes, that's the issue with Eddie Howe and Jurgen Klopp. For Jurgen Klopp, he's now the manager that has beaten another manager for the longest of times without any break in the streak. I want you to go online and find out yourself. Nobody will tell you when they beat person. It's what they call abuse. I don't want to say child abuse because Eddie Howe is a grown man with beards up and down. Man, what's the name of the other guy? Just sitting down. Welcome to another episode of Strictly Sports with John Bido and Rotimi. Yes, Rotimi is on the house, and let him introduce himself.
Always nice to be back on the podcast here. You know, I've been so excited to come back on it and can't wait to get on. But there's something I've been meaning to discuss, you know, like just right off the bat, Mourinho and Lukaku. You have seen the transfer, right? Mourinho, Lukaku, time, European drama, heaven or hell, champions or divide, glory or glory. Like, it can go either way, no in between. Are we going to experience the downfall of Mourinho, or are we going to see Lukaku save Mourinho once again? Will Mourinho reign supreme, or will Lukaku be sent back in once again?
We wait. I love that. That was a good way to you know, usher us into the Lukaku versus Mourinho drama. So this is the thing, right? Lukaku has been a divisive player for a very long time. And from when he was at Chelsea and going to Manchester United and then leaving Manchester United for Inter Milan, coming back to Chelsea, granting that, you know, I don't know, very ill-advised interview, and then going back to Inter again. And now he betrayed Inter, sort of, once speaking with or flirting with Juventus. And then now again, there's the issue of Juventus saying, no, we don't want him. And Inter said, we too, we don't want you. So it's now the, you know, when they catch someone cheating on their partner and the first partner leaves, and then the side chick or side guy leaves as well. Now nobody wants him. Then Mourinho, the Prince Charming, comes in and sweeps him off his feet and says, oh, don't worry, you're the rejected stone. I will make you the coral stone. So what do you think?
Do you know what is so funny about this situation? I was once, you know, we had this huge argument, I think it was last season, where we talked about Lukaku, and I was defending him staunchly because I believe that he was treated badly. But how many clubs has it been now? There's Manchester United, there's Chelsea, there's Inter Milan, there's Juventus. Everywhere he goes, he just seems to want his bridges. So sometimes you have to look inward. Is he the problem, or are they the problem? Like, he always has a very good excuse for leaving this club. But you have to start wondering. You can't have 5-6 European clubs that are just out to get you. Maybe Lukaku here is the problem. And maybe Mourinho has just dug his grave.
Yeah, it's not a maybe. I believe Lukaku is the problem. I believe he is the problem. But let me tell you, you know, when he granted the interview in Sky Sports, some people were like, Chelsea were the ones who messed up. Why did they sign someone that they knew?
I was one of them.
Right? Now, when it was revealed that, before he even played the Champions, I think from like January, he was already communicating with Juventus. You see how bad that is, you're on loan at another club, Inter Milan, from your parent club, Chelsea, and you're already flirting with another club, Juventus. Isn't that terrible? Isn't that bad?
Like, what even surprised me the most was when Inter Milan came out with, they came out with such a ridiculous statement that I feel it's still baffling me up to now. They said they feel betrayed by Lukaku, that Lukaku is not picking up his phone call. And he's not picking up two phone calls from his teammates. And I'm wondering, I said, well, is Lukaku actually airing the whole football club? If you don't want to go to Inter Milan, tell them you are not interested in going here any longer. He puts all his chips on Juventus, and now Juventus are not signing him. It's not like Lukaku's situation right now is so ridiculous. And if not for Roma coming to sweep to him, he might have just spent 6 months on the Chelsea bench, which I believe at this point in time, maybe he just might end up deserving.
Yeah, so you see how ridiculous that is, right? You know, we're used to a guy saying, so I've been speaking with this girl for a while, and then after a while, she ghosted me. I tried to call her. She doesn't pick anymore. A lady saying, so there's this guy. He took me out, bought me stuff. And then when I got home, he blocked my line. He stopped picking my calls and stuff like that. And when I got, maybe when you went out with him, you went to eat more than, you know, your stomach could carry, and probably took cake away. And the guy felt embarrassed or felt like, oh, this girl just wants to eat my money. or for the girl, she's all feeling like she's on top of the world. So many guys are reaching out to me and all. So for Lukaku to have done that, right, in his mind, Juventus are going to get me now. So there's no need for me to, give attention or pay attention to Inter Milan. So it's ridiculous. It's insulting. It's shameful. But Lukaku, I hope he learns his lesson. I actually want him to succeed. The reason is that I want Jose Mourinho to succeed. And so at this point, our wants and needs and wishes align. So if he can score, barring that terrible press touch that he does as if he's wearing Timberland boots. But besides that, I hope he's able to bang in the goals for Roma. Roma need, a striker that can, step up. Tammy Abraham is out for a very long time. They have, what is he called now? What's the name of this guy?
Dybala.
No, not even Dybala. The striker. Belotti. Andrea Belotti. How would I forget the name? Yeah, Andrea Belotti. Yeah. And then they've got their guys. Yeah, Sada Azmunabi was the name of that other guy. And now they'll be getting Romelu Lukaku. He's already in Italy. At least by the time we'll be listening to this, he's probably a player of Roma already. Okay, so that's that for one of the biggest transfer sagas of the Premier League so far. So let's just talk about some of the, other transfer sagas that have been going on and some of the, so there's something right now going on. Who was it Arsenal played? Was it Fulham? Is it Fulham I want to talk about now? Or the game before Fulham?
Did we win or did we draw?
No, you drew Fulham's game, right? Well, what did you play the game before Fulham?
You won 1-0, yeah. Okay, in chat.
Fulham's game and some, I don't know, but maybe. Wait, there's no need to
I'm talking about the goal that Arsenal scored while the player was on the ground.
No, I'm not talking about that because I want to focus on transfers. Don't worry, there will be a time to talk about controversial goal. Let's talk about Kai Havertz. So, Kai Havertz was hooked off at some point in the game, and then Fabio Vieira, he changed the game, 2 assists. Those progressive runs that were expected from the left center midfielder were the things that he started doing in the game because Havertz wasn't doing that. So what are your thoughts on that?
No, so I wouldn't say Havertz didn't do that because he actually made progressive runs in the first half. I think he even had 2 opportunities. There was 1 point blank on goal that he missed and just went out. So he made the runs, but I think Havertz is suffering from, number one is he's not in the right space mentally. We can't see it. He's not confident on the ball. He's not doing, I don't want to believe this is about skill level because this is definitely not the way he was at Bayer Leverkusen. So I think
this is not the way he was at Chelsea.
It was horrible at Chelsea. I think it's a mental thing. And I believe that Arteta should be able to get him past that mental block. And besides, contrary to what people are saying, I really like what I am seeing from Havertz. So I see that he has the tools. Physically, he's very imposing. When you give him the ball, he rarely loses the ball physically. He might lose the ball because of maybe a poor first touch or maybe he just didn't pass correctly. But he doesn't lose the ball when he's overwhelmed physically. So I really like what I've seen. And I like the positions he's getting into. I haven't seen that from a midfielder at Arsenal since maybe Eran. So like I'm running from. I think we had this conversation during the offseason when I told you that if Arsenal were going to start the season with Gabriel Jesus up top, we needed to have a midfielder to give us 10 to 15 Premier League goals. And you might laugh when I say that, but Havertz will give us double figure goals this season.
And okay, so before you continue to embarrass yourself, just chill a minute. You know, at Chelsea, actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, in the Premier League, it was among the top players with the highest number of runs into the box or something like that.
So the thing is, I'm not saying I'm going to erase his whole tenure at Chelsea. We are erasing it. Never happened.
Why you want to erase Champions League final goal, Club World Cup final goal, Super Cup win?
The reason I'm doing that is, number one, he didn't play in his preferred position. He played as a striker all through. And I can't tell you guys, Havertz is not a striker.
put in midfield. Remember when Lampard started? Lampard actually started him as a midfielder on the 4-3-3.
Yeah. You said it again. Lampard started him.
Who? They moved him behind Werner at one point, then before playing him as a nine. So the place he actually played the best was just slightly behind Werner. That was, I think if I'm not mistaken, the second leg against Real Madrid. I think in the Champions League final as well, he started alongside Werner up top and stuff like that. But the thing about Havertz, he starts picking up in the second part of the season. Basically, he starts picking up in the second part of the season, let's say from like February, March. That's when he starts picking up. That's what he does, at least from what I've observed. He played for Chelsea for 3 years, so you can imagine the pain I went through. Us,
I don't know how you guys survived having Havertz and Mount as regular starters in your team.
Yeah. So now that you mentioned Mount,
I can understand having one, but the two.
Man, Mount, though. Man, Mount. So, Mason Mount, what are your thoughts on Mason Mount?
At least we didn't buy Mount. That's my thoughts. We could have bought Mount.
All right. From Mount, let's quickly go to some players that, like, just mention. Okay, before I even leave us now, let's talk about Rice. Rice has been a good transfer for you. Yes or no?
Rice has been an excellent transfer. Someone once told me that the how you know a good defensive midfielder is when you don't see him in the game. That's how you know a defensive midfielder is working. I'm not talking about your player like Kante. Kante is
But what about Mikel?
How many times do you really see Mikel on the ball except when they need his ball holding capabilities? You really, when he's breaking up plays, when there are very few midfielders, unless the midfielder is your deep line playmaker, like a Javier
Rodri,
like a Mikel, like a Rodri,
Busquets,
line playmakers, Busquets. But if you have genuine defensive midfielders, your Roy Keane's, your people that are just,
you will see Roy Keane in games. I watched him as a child. I saw Roy Keane
really,
a lot. Well, playmaker,
you'd rarely see him. You might see him once or twice, but you'd rarely be able to, because he will not make mistakes and he will clean up the attack. Cleanly is when you start seeing things from Casemiro, like yellow cards, sliding tackles, then you know that the threat means that his positioning is poor. So he has to remedy that by making fully sliding tackles. And this is not a jab to Casemiro. It's just an example of it. The best midfielder has been out of position also.
All right. So talking about from Rice, right? Let's go to West Ham and talk about the replacement that they've gotten for Rice. So they've gotten from the money that they used to sell, that is got from the sale of Rice, right? Yeah. Not Asmati, not Jollof. they've gotten James Ward-Prowse. They've gotten Edson Álvarez from Ajax. They've also gotten Mohamed Kudus from Ajax.
I don't think there's anything that made better transfers. You could have similar transfers, but I don't think there's any team in the Premier League that made better transfers than West Ham. Those are the kinds of transfers that you expect a big team to make. Those are the kinds of transfers you expect someone like Tottenham to do with the Harry Kane money, but we know they are not going to do that. These are players that you can improve on, that you can also sell eventually for good value. Excellent transfers by West Ham. And they've already started showing, some of these players have already started showing themselves. And I think Kudus is one to look out for. He's going
Kudus. What Kudus? Kudus.
Kudus. Kudus.
The
excellent in the need. Like I out of all the wingers, I'm looking forward to watching Diaby. I'm looking forward to watching Kudus. I look forward to watching Mitoma. But the Kudus, definitely. He's very good on the ball. He makes wise decisions. He has a very good strong excellent shot. And, you know, his positioning also is like, he's also not your typical, I'm polished what I want to say very well. He's also not your typical muscle head. He's very smart with the ball and, you know, he thinks before he does actions. Kind of reminds me of how Manny was at Southampton. I expect great things from him.
All right. Talking about transfer still, right? I'm trying to go to Tottenham, because you mentioned Tottenham have been able to plug their creativity hole yes, there's no Harry Kane in terms in the front. So they also, but they've needed for a long time now someone who is super creative. I think since they lost Eriksen, they've not really had a chief creator in the side. And James Maddison has come in to take that slot. And it makes you wonder, why didn't Manchester United go for Maddison? Why didn't they go for Maddison, right? And they chose to go for Mount instead. It doesn't make sense.
Andy's looking at it from outside. I think it's simple. They don't know what they're doing at Manchester United. It's simple. Like, it's not, let's look at the transfer of Anthony. We've worked on Anthony for how many months now? It's been at least over a year. Is he capable of anything? Like, it's not like Mudryk. Mudryk hasn't really played that much. Anthony has played a lot over the past year. We have not seen, he has no quality. It's not like the kind of player that I say, okay, he's lacking confidence or anything. He just doesn't have the quality. And Man United have made signings like this over and over and over again, and they just make foolish signings. Look at, I think Maddison went to Spurs for 40 million or something, right? Around that rate.
And 40 something, yeah, but less than 50.
Mount went to Manchester United for over 60 million. Is that, like, how is that good business? Like, they chased Mount for a while. That, it's not even like they just went in and they got Mount. They chased him for a while. So they bargained. Like, at that point, there was no one in the club that just was like, hold up, look at this. Who are we trying to sign? And what are the alternatives in the market? Like, there were a lot of alternatives in the market this summer. And it was just surprising. Manchester United decided. I heard that now they are looking to sign Cucurella as a, you know, to call
as a left back option. Yes.
And yes. It's shocking. Like, why do you want to sign Cucurella? Number one is you'll be giving funds directly to your rivals. Number two is you are signing somebody that is not good enough to play for your rival. Like, that used to mean.
Third choice center back right now.
It used to mean something in the Premier League. Like, how many times did this happen in the past where Alex Ferguson would go to a rival and sign their backup player? Never happened.
Third choice left back. That's interesting. I'm talking about left backs, right? I'm talking about signing of Cucurella. No, so Manchester United now we're coming to Chelsea. Chelsea have made a lot of transfers this summer, right? They've brought in the likes of Caicedo, long saga, Lavia. That was a battle between them and Manchester United, and Liverpool rather, for good players. Then Leslie Ugochukwu, a young player. Santos joining in, even though they signed him since January and loaned him back to his parent club. And the likes of Angelo Gabriel, or what's his name, if I'm not mistaken. Then there is Moreira, and of recent David Washington. So a lot of players have even lost track. But what people are not focusing on is how well Chelsea have gotten rid of, they've trimmed excess fat. And they didn't trim it at a loss or something. They've trimmed excess fat while raking in a lot of money. They sold Kai Havertz and Mount, surplus requirements for over 100 million. They sold Koulibaly, Edouard Mendy went, Kante went for free, Kovacic to Manchester City. You know, like, they've inflated players, some others on
I honestly don't know who is taking care of Chelsea's transfers, but he needs a raise and he needs to be investigated. Like,
this is the thing, right? So, beyond the owners, right? Sorry for cutting you short. Beyond the owners, Toboli and Bedad Egbali, there are certain directors of, I think, of football and some other these things. So, there's Paul Will Staley, if I'm not mistaken. There's a Patrick Stewart, if I'm right about that. And there's one guy, I think Joe Shields has left or still there, I can't remember. But these guys are handling transfers and they're actually very good at, first of all, looking at certain players. Football, Paul Westerly, for example, used to be at Brighton, you get, until last year. So,
yeah,
it's good at getting...
No, that was a steal.
Yeah. Because I'm not Brighton at offloading players. So, yeah, that's the thing.
No, it's been excellent business. Like, I was anti-Chelsea for quite a while this past offseason, but looking... I think just two games into the season and I fell in love with Chelsea. Fell in love with Jackson. I'm not a Chelsea fan. I'm an Arsenal fan. I hate Chelsea, but you get the point. Like, watching Jackson, let's not even talk about Sterling's reinvigoration of QL. Let's talk about Jackson. Watching Jackson alone, he passed the eye test. First two games, I don't think he produced any results, right? But I kept telling you, like, what I saw in this boy, like, I truly believe his movement, his assurance on the ball. He's, you know, very few players, a lot of players, when they pick the ball, like Antonio at Manchester United, for example, you don't think they have a goal. They don't plan to do anything with the ball. They hope that when they get the ball, they will be able to. But Jackson, from the second he receives the ball, he knows where he's doing, he knows what he's going to do. He rarely ever does something without a plan. I know it, like, strength, physicality, aggression, composure, he has everything. Like, not if I was expecting to really like this one, but really like it. Reminds me of Didi.
Yeah, and he came in for less than 35 million, if I'm not mistaken, around that amount. That's interesting. And he sold Kabat for almost double that amount to the club he support, Arsenal.
No, Kai Havertz will come good. Well, I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm telling you, Kai Havertz will come good. I don't think we'll regret the transfer. It might not be like a world breaker or whatever, but I think he'll fit his role. Give him time. We needed the physicality in the team, and we needed to replace Granit Xhaka. So I'm good with the transfer. I'm not over the moon, but I'll choose to trust in Arteta, and Havertz.
All right, keep trusting in Arteta. All right, let's wrap things up. What would you say as we wrap up?
At the Premier League, like, I haven't been this excited for a Premier League season for a very, very long time. Like, there's so many teams that, aside from your Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, I think that's just it, right? And Newcastle, right? Aside from them, you have the clubs that are directly below them in the tier. You have your Spurs, your Everton, your West Ham, your Aston Villa, Brighton. Like, there's so many small clubs that aren't really small anymore. Like, it kind of reminds me of when we had the Fellaini and Arteta years at Everton, where the middle clubs were actually middle table. You had your top clubs, your middle tier, and the bottom clubs. For a while now, we just had your top clubs and your bottom tier clubs. But now we are going back to having 5-6 clubs that you, away from home, as a big club, you go there with the hopes of getting a draw and maybe create a lucky win. So I really like it. Like, every game is one to watch.
All right. That's a great
one. One last thing. I do want to mention, have you followed the recent stuff by Lyles, where he was talking about the NBA and, like, the sprinter, where he was talking about the NBA and how NBA chair... NBA winners, the playoff winners, they call themselves world champions. And it was trying to understand, why do it's called National Basketball Association. Why do you call yourself world champions? And the basketball players were getting all puffy and angry about it. But, like, it's common sense. You are the national champions. You are your country's champions. And they feel they are the world champions. It's amazing to me. Do you share their beliefs?
So this is the grand delusion that happens with American sports, right? Major League Baseball, National Basketball Association, as well as the National Football League. When they win, they call themselves world champions. Like, you know why I like the fact that Lyles was the one who came out to say it. Now, this is an American who has gone outside the country, right, to compete in Diamond Leagues, to compete in World Championships, and to compete in the Olympics. Now, these tournaments have athletes from all over the world not coming to just compete in the league, but coming to fly their country flags, their country's flags, you know, representing their countries, and then actually competing for their countries. And then he has defeated these guys to be declared world champion in the different events, 100 meters, 200 meters, 4x100 meters, and so on. But these guys sitting there in their little bubble, in the United States, feel, because the other players from other countries also come to our country to play now. But where are they playing? They are playing in the National Basketball Association in the United States.
Do you know the funniest part? Like, I was listening to Stephen A. Smith, and that is, like, a presenter that I respect. It's one of the...
Yeah, even me too.
And I was shocked by his... I don't want to say ignorance. It feels insulting when I say ignorance, but he just came across as obnoxious and ignorant when he talked about the best players coming into their league, and it is because they are the best team. It doesn't make semantic sense. Like, it doesn't make English. When you look at the English of it, they are world champions. You have to compete. You have to compete against everyone. They qualify. You know, if you look at the World Cup, people come out of their qualification groups representing their continent, and then when you finally win, you can be crowned a world champion. But you know, I think it's just
imagine winning the Champions League and then saying because you play in Europe, which is the best league in the world and the most popular league that has to have Messi, Ronaldo and the likes, and then you now tell us that even if Ronaldo and Messi are playing in the same team, they can't call themselves world champions until they go out there and then compete, their clubs compete maybe in the Club World Cup ahead, and then they win. You can ask, okay, these are world champions. Oh, that's the reason why during banter now, when we're bantering in football, someone will be like, this guy is only European champion, he's a local champion, we joke around with it. That's because we actually have sense. We are not deluded on a grand level.
I think I haven't even engaged any. I've been away from Twitter the past couple of days because, like, you know me, I'm usually active on NBA Twitter, but that alone, like, it's going to be difficult to convince people otherwise, especially when they have been all they've known all their lives, and it's just the NBA and the bubble in America. So it's, I just like live and let live, like they say. So I just left it alone.
So you live, yes, that's the thing, Shah. Someone that's in the ignorance, allow them to wallow in self-ignorance. When they are ready to come out of the bubble, they'll bust it themselves and come out. All right, thank you very much, Rotimi, for being a part of this episode.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. It's been a while. I hope we have another one very soon. It's been really nice.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so too. I really, because yeah, this is actually a very wonderful episode. All right, thank you very much for being a part of Strictly Sports with Jumpino. And Rotimi, it's been a wonderful ride. We can't wait to, see you on another episode, listening to us and supporting us. Don't forget to, wherever you see these, just comment, share, just help us spread the word around. And don't forget to spread kindness around wherever you find yourself. The world could make use of a little kindness from you. It's been a wonderful time. Stay true to yourself and bye for now.